Maryland's Hot Stove Show with Glenn Geffner is on.
Nice and fires. Morneau swings. Loops one into center field. Out goes Etch. A long way out. He dives and makes the catch to save the night.
940 wins.
How about that for thrills?
Miami Sports.
Hey, hello again, everybody. It was 43 days ago that we brought down the curtain on the 2014 season Washington. It has been a while, but it's good to be talking baseball with you again. 2 weeks after the World Series ended, the Giants, the last team standing in Major League Baseball. So you've had a chance to catch your breath a little bit. And tonight it is time to officially fire up the hot stove. We're glad you're with us, and we hope you'll be with us as we talk baseball every Monday night at this time, right up until the start of spring training in February. There is really no such thing as an off season in baseball anymore. There's news to discuss and react to across the majors just about every day during the winter, and I'll be here to do just that with you every Monday night, with our focus, of course, primarily being on the Marlins after a 15-win improvement from 2013 to 2014. This is a big winter for this franchise as the Marlins look to make an even bigger jump in 2015, when we hope has Miami enjoying October baseball for the first time since the most recent World Series championship season back in 2003. You know, if you follow this team closely, a lot of pieces are already in place, but this is a winner to hopefully plug some holes, maybe add another experienced arm to the starting rotation, help pick up some of the slack as we await the anticipated midseason return of Jose Fernandez. The Marlins would like to add a bat or two to what was dramatically improved offense this past season, another weapon maybe to go along with Stanton and Yelich, Ozuna and McGee in that lineup. And you know there'll be a lot of discussion this winter about Giancarlo Stanton. The Marlins preparing an offer in hopes of keeping the Hank Aaron Award winner and the possible National League MVP in Miami for the long haul. Will he accept and make that commitment to the franchise in the city? That's probably the first question on every Marlins fan's mind right now. Could other young standouts be in line for multi-year extensions and early career security this winter as well? That is also something we'll keep an eye on as we talk some baseball around the hot stove between now and the start of spring training. Now, here's the deal. Much of our show each week is going to be spent talking to guests you'll generally only hear right here this time of year, top Marlins officials and all your favorite players. But I want you to be a part of this show as well. We'll invite you to call in to participate, and you can always tweet me your questions anytime as well. Tonight, we'll hope to get to some of your phone calls and tweets around the bottom of this 7 o'clock hour. If you'd like to call in, the number to join us, 866-801-0940. That number again, 866-801-0940. We'll get some phone calls at about 7:30 tonight. If you would rather reach out to me via Twitter, you can do that anytime, at Glenn Geffner. Keep an eye on my Twitter inbox as we move along here tonight. We want to hear what's on your mind, and I'm always happy to do my best to try to answer any questions that you might have. But as I said, we also want you to be able to hear from Marlins newsmakers. And with that in mind, let's get right out to Scottsdale, Arizona, where we're joined tonight by Marlins President of Baseball Operations, Michael Hill, who is just wrapping up day one of the annual general managers meetings. Michael, we always enjoy talking baseball with you, but especially realizing what a busy time this is for you, we're extra grateful to have you with us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. Happy to be talking baseball here as we fire up the hot stove a little bit. Now, you've got the winter meetings coming up about a month from now, and they tend to get all the attention nationally on an annual basis. But take us behind the scenes a little bit. What goes on at the GM meetings, and what's a typical day like for you out there this week?
Well, I would have to say that this time of season is where everything starts. It's our first opportunity to get face time with our peers, and really you get an idea of what their needs are, and you really lay the foundation to make things happen.
Now, before we dig deep with you on Marlins issues, there was a lot of talk in 2014 about the introduction of instant replay and the very controversial Rule 7.13. I've got to imagine with all the GMs together out there in Arizona now, those two topics are going to be very much part of the agenda. Do you anticipate and would you recommend much change in those two areas looking ahead to 2015 and beyond?
Well, I think you have to separate those two things. I would say the instant replay portion of our game, I think everyone, the goal of everyone is just to get the call right. And I would say as we move forward, you'll probably see that as an industry, we want to try to streamline it and make it as timely a process as possible so that we don't take away from the flow of the game. The first year of it, I think, with the intent being to get the call right, that, you know, we were successful in that and taking advantage of the technology that's out there. So I hope that we continue and expect that we'll continue along that same line and making sure that we get the calls right and try to do it in as timely a fashion as we can. We're out here in the fall league. You know, a portion of our meeting is seeing our fall league teams. And a new thing that they've implemented, at least for the fall league, is sort of like a 20-second shot clock, just to keep the pace of game moving. And it applies to every aspect of the game, because I think, you know, as an industry, we want to keep the game flowing and keep everyone involved in what's going on.
You like that pitch clock and what you've seen so far?
You know, it's our home club. It's the Salt River Club, which has Marlin players on it. And from a rhythm standpoint, you know, I still, you know, reserve judgment to see how it'll, you know, be implemented at a major league level. But at least at the minor league level, it really keeps the pitchers working. It keeps them on the dirt. It keeps the hitters in the batter's box and really keeps the game moving along fairly quickly. So that, from that standpoint, it's been good to see. I'm interested to see how it transitions and translates to the major league.
Let me take you back real quick to the other part of the question. Rule 7.13, we know, was controversial this past year. You didn't have any major catcher injuries. That's the positive out of the rule, but there certainly were some issues as the year went on. Do you expect the GMs to suggest some changes on that rule as you move ahead to next season?
Well, I know that there was a lot of changes on the fly, and we knew that there would be, as it was, you know, something new, and there's always change with it. I think, you know, there were a number of games that were impacted by the rule. You know, probably one of the bigger ones are our July 31st game. Yep. Against the Reds, where you know, a play at home plate was overruled and the runner, you know, called safe. So it's definitely something on our agenda. And I'm not sure how it will be revised. You know, it was cleaned up a little after our July 31st incident, just to put a little more common sense into the rule. And really, I think that's, you know, the overriding sentiment is just to put a little common sense back into the rule. And if you have a situation where a guy is out by a significant distance, then there's no way that play should ever be overturned.
I'm talking with Marlins President of Baseball Operations, Michael Hill. Michael, I recall from having attended several GM meetings in the past, the tradition is at some point this week, the World Series winning GM breaks out his American Express and springs for a round of drinks for everybody on hand. Looking back at the World Series with you for a minute, Brian Sabian's Giants won it. He's going to have to pay up. But that Royals franchise, to me, is one that seems to have a lot in common with the Marlins. Coming from a smaller market, looking at what in their case had even been a much longer championship drought, a lot of young homegrown talent playing their home games in a good pitcher's park. As you watched the World Series this year, were there things you saw in that Kansas City ball club that can maybe be applied here?
Yeah, well, definitely. There's definitely connections when you look at the market size and how the team was built, you know, with a lot of their homegrown, drafted, and developed players. There's definitely similarities, you know, to how we build a roster. And I think when you're talking about a club like Kansas City that's not, you know, one of the larger market clubs with the larger payroll, I think that's even a bigger connection to who we are and how we built things. But it just shows that, you know, when you have talent and you get hot at the right time, that, you know, you have an opportunity to be successful. And I think that is always our goal, to play into October and play into the World Series and bring another championship home to South Florida. And I think the overriding sentiment in our clubhouse is that, you know, we're well on our way. We took a nice step in 2014, but there's still work to be done before we get where we want to be, and that's ultimately as a world champion.
Now let's turn our focus to that work that you're beginning now with these GM meetings. The question on everybody's mind, and the one we've got to start with, is Giancarlo Stanton. I know both sides committed to keeping the conversations private, but what can you tell us about where the process stands right now?
I guess the biggest thing is that that there's dialogue and the negotiations are ongoing. And you know, from our standpoint, you know, he's our MVP. He's the heart of our lineup. And we want to keep him in South Florida as long as we can. And, you know, we'll continue to work on trying to make that happen.
I think for the average fan, this negotiation kind of takes place in a vacuum. There's just one question. Will Giancarlo agree to an extension? But for you, this would seem to be a very complicated issue. As much as everybody wants Giancarlo in a Marlins uniform for the long term, you've got to get him locked up in a way where you can also build a contending team around him year after year. History shows, as you know, the teams that commit about a fifth or a sixth even of their payroll to a single player generally can't enjoy sustained success. Can you explain how you handle that very fragile balance?
Well, it is definitely a fragile balance, and it just puts the emphasis on building an organization and making sure that you have the overall depth in your system, in your minor league system, and you have quality talent that you're drafting and developing so that you can keep, you know, productive and talented players around those big ticket, you know, items. And, you know, from our standpoint and similarly with Giancarlo, he wants to win. That's definitely a common denominator, you know, on both sides, that we both want to win. And, you know, that I think that's, you know, what will allow us to be a successful franchise from, you know, from now and every year after is to make sure that we have a consistent flow of talent that comes and helps when there's, you know, whatever injuries and anything that happens. As we always know, things will happen in a major league season, and that we're prepared and we can, you know, deal with them and keep winning ball games.
Everything we've heard about Giancarlo's recovery from his season-ending injury has been really positive. When we've seen him, he's looked great. What's the latest on how he's doing physically right now?
Physically, he's great. We've spoken to him over the phone, and he's in great spirits. He, you know, the calendar has turned, so it's into November now. So he's into his off-season program now, and with the sole focus of having himself as prepared physically and mentally to have another tremendous season.
Has he swung a bat yet?
He has not, but you know he's into his off-season program, and that is yet to come.
Now, this is our season premiere of Marlins Hot Stove tonight, and you're home for the Marlins all season, all off-season long. 940 Wins. Talking with Marlins President of Baseball Operations Michael Hill. Michael's going to stick with us until the bottom of the hour here as we talk about all the latest Marlins comings and goings. A lot more to get to, a lot of speculation out of Phoenix today. I want to ask you about a little bit as well. First, though, got to take a quick break, though. When we come back, more with Michael Hill. So stay with us on Marlins Hot Stove on 940 Wins.
Baseball's burning questions all winter long. Winter long. Fire up the stove with the Marlins' Glenn Geffner on 940 Wins.
Right around third, Ozuna the throw to the plate, and Wright is out at the plate. Ozuna throws out the tying man for the second out of the eighth.
Miami Sports.
Talking some baseball, as we will at this time every Monday night between now and the start of spring training in February. It's Marlins' Hot Stove, and we are joined live from Scottsdale, Arizona by Michael Hill, the Marlins President of Baseball Operations. Michael out there for the annual general managers meetings this week. Michael, as we move along, we're going to try to sprinkle in some questions that listeners have submitted to me via Twitter and Facebook. And I'm going to start with one from Steve on Facebook. And actually, this ties in with the Ken Rosenthal report just an hour or so ago. He wanted to know, in addition to trying to resolve Giancarlo's contract situation, certainly the biggie, is there the possibility this winter of maybe locking up Christian Yelich, Marcelo Ozuna, or other members of this team's young nucleus as well? Ken Rosenthal reporting that maybe talks are underway with Jose Fernandez, Yelich, Echevarria, and others.
Yeah, that's the beauty of these meetings. When you get baseball execs and media in one place, there is always you know, tremendous speculation and rumors all over the place. You know, our goal, you know, as a baseball operations department is consistent, sustained winning. And, you know, that's, you know, why we have our jobs and why we get paid to try to have winning successful seasons every year. So as we look at our inventory, we look at our roster, we have very talented young players, our Gold Glove left fielder, Christian Yelich, Marcelo Ozuna, and center Etch, it's shortstop. Jose, you look at Henderson Alvarez, we do have a lot of talented young players. And I think as we look at how we will construct our roster moving forward, I think it's natural to explore if there's possibilities to do that. To say anything is imminent, I'd say is premature, but it's definitely something that as we look to build a consistent winner that we definitely will explore.
Jose Fernandez's name, one that we just mentioned. We know he started throwing around the 1st of October. What's the latest in Jose's progress?
He is progressing. He has hit all of his thresholds and continues to hit all of the to the earmark threshold that he has in his rehab program. And as I've said, you know, we're cautiously optimistic. We know that this is a long process, and he's still right in the thick of it. But his rehab has gone without a hitch to this point, and we hope, as I knock on wood, that it continues to be that way, and you know, we can get to the threshold where we put him up on the mound, which will be early next year, sometime around spring training when he steps on the mound, and hopefully we'll continue to have positive news and progress with his return to play.
We had the first somewhat major free agent signing of the winter today. Michael Gudauer agreeing to a 2-year deal with the Mets. We've gotten some questions from fans about other external moves that you might try to make this winter, maybe on the infield, maybe in the rotation. As trade talks begin to heat up, as you and DJ begin conversations with free agents, what are your top priorities as you try to improve this roster?
Well, I think we're going to have a lot more clarity when we leave these meetings. We'll have an opportunity FaceTime with our peers to get a feel where there might be matches and opportunities of where we can improve. I think our goal was obviously to improve on the 77 wins that we had in 2014 and get ourselves to the playoffs. And how we get there, I think we'll have a little more clarity following these meetings. But you look at areas where we can improve. I think we have the best young outfield in all of baseball in Yelich, Ozuna, and Stanton. We have a Gold Glove shortstop and Andini Echeverria, comeback player of the year at third base and Casey McGee. Second base has obviously been a lot of players in and out of that position, so that's an area where if we can get some consistent production, an area we can improve. First base, Garrett Jones had a solid year, and I think offensively. He's done a solid job, but I think once we get with our peers and we see if there's areas where we can upgrade or improve, we won't hesitate to pursue them. But the goal offensively is to try to extend and make that lineup a little bit deeper. And from a pitching standpoint, we know that Jose will not start the year opening day, and if there's a way to solidify that rotation, we'll look to do that also.
You've got a lot of young arms trying to knock down that door as well. I want to ask you about a few of them. Andrew Heaney had a really nice year at AA and AAA last year, struggled early on in the big leagues, pitched better in September. I know you had to be encouraged by that. Where does Andrew Heaney sit as you look ahead to 2015?
Well, that's definitely an area of depth for us and something that I'm very proud of. When you talk about the upper-level starting pitching, that is major league ready. Andrew Heaney, Anthony DeSclafani, who's out here in the fall league, our minor league pitcher of the year, Justin Nicolino, a rotation made of Nicolinos at AA, Jose Urena, Brian Flynn. I think you've got some upper-level guys who are knocking on the door to the big league. They're completely controllable with options for us, so they will all be in Major League spring training, so you don't have to, depend on one of those. And you can give them the time that they need. That's something that we really focused on last year, was trying not to rush these guys to the big leagues. Sometimes circumstances force your hand and you have to bring them a little earlier than you would like. But I think in on the whole, BJ and I are really trying to make sure that we give our guys the innings and the starts that they need at the major league, and not rush them, and really make sure that when they do come back that they're ready to step right in and be productive major league pitchers.
You mentioned Anthony DeSclafani, who we saw a lot of in different roles at the big league level this past year. Looking at the numbers, he's having a terrific fall out there in Arizona.
He definitely is, and I think he's a perfect example of a pitcher who, you know, because of circumstances, once Jose was injured, we tried to sort of fill that spot in the rotation as best we could, and there were a number of candidates that gave it a shot, and Anthony is a tremendous young talent. He just lacks the consistency to be a productive major league pitcher. At least he did when he, you know, came up during the season. And he's, you know, he knows, you know, Chuck Hernandez and Mike Redmond have talked to him about what our goals are with him, and he's accepted the challenge and has really done a good job.
A guy we haven't seen yet in the big leagues who had a dominant year in Double-A, your minor league pitcher of the year, the Southern League pitcher of the year, Justin Nicolino. Tell us about Nicolino and the progress he made this past season.
It's tremendous, and he's a perfect example of one of our young pitchers who we just kept him put. He stayed in Double-A the entire year. Justin, we acquired in the Toronto trade in the fall of 2012. And, you know, it's a 6'3" left-hander with three-pitch mix, plus command, and a competitive streak that really, you know, he doesn't give in. And I think that's why he was able to win 16 games at Double-A. He commands the strike zone and really commands the tempo and rhythm of a game. And I think when you're talking about being an effective pitcher, you really want to have that ability to keep hitters off balance. And that would be his strength. I mean, he knows how to control a hitter's bat speed, and I think that's a big reason why he had so much success in 2014.
Chris on Facebook wanted to ask you about what you saw from your 2014 number one pick, Tyler Kolek, in his pro debut down the stretch this past season.
Tyler Kolek is a tremendous talent, and we were extremely happy that he was there and available to us second overall. I know we picked second, but there was still a lot of anxiety that he wouldn't get to us just because he is such a tremendous talent. He has size, he has strength, he has stuff. He has all of the attributes that should allow him to be a very successful pitcher at the major league level. We spent this first summer just getting him acclimated to the routine of being a professional player. He participated in our instructional league after his minor league season, and he is a tremendous talent, and looking forward to following his growth and development, and looking forward to the day when the fans of South Florida can see him toe the rubber in Miami.
When you look at your rotation to start 2015, yes, Henderson Alvarez have a great year this past season. Jared Cozart was terrific after you picked him up at the deadline from the Astros. Tom Kohler took the ball every 5 days, competed, did a real nice job for you. The enigma in that group was Nathan Eovaldi, who at times could be so dominant and just take your breath away and again was inconsistent. You mentioned the word consistency before. I'm talking about Desclafani. As you head into next season with Nathan Eovaldi, where do you stand?
Well, we really think at the end of the season, September, you know, Chuck Hernandez found something in his delivery that really should open up, you know, both sides of the plate for him. And I think you saw his last three starts in September. You saw a guy who commanded both sides of the plate and pitched, you know, at least seven innings in each of those starts. And I think that is the maturation and growth of young starting pitching. And, you know, Nathan, you know, got to the big leagues at an early age and you know, was a part of a big trade with us and when the Dodgers acquired Hanley Ramirez. And when those guys are thrust into that major league spotlight and they have to finish themselves off in the big leagues, it's a very difficult position to be in because it's all about results when you're in the big leagues. And to try to develop a young pitcher in the big leagues while he's trying to get hitters out, it's very difficult. And that's really why we've tried our best and we will continue moving forward to allow these guys the innings and the time that they need at the minor league so that they are more of a finished product when they get to the big league. Evaldi's a perfect example of that, but we really feel like we made some steps in the right direction. It's tremendous stuff. As we know, it's stamina, it's strength, it's great athleticism, and there's no reason that, you know, we can't see him in 2015 have a year similar to what Henderson Alvarez did for us in 2014.
We've got a couple of minutes left with the Marlins President of Baseball Operations, Michael Hill, tonight. I want to ask you about Kike Hernandez, who came over in that Jared Cozart deal as well. We saw him play some second base, saw him play some outfield down the stretch this past season. What is his role as you head into spring training?
Well, I think that'll really be determined by how this offseason shapes up for us and what we're able to do. We know he can play the infield. We know he can play second base. We like his bat. He's only 22 years old, so he is a puppy also when you look at his youth and experience at the major league level, but also a tremendous talent. We love his versatility. We know that we can play him at second. We know that we can play him in the outfield. So we have options with him. We love his versatility. And I think that's something that we are definitely mindful of as we go through our off-season, you know, meetings and discussions with other ball clubs, because we really like the player and his ability and think he's going to be a productive big leaguer. Just don't know if it'll be right away or if, you know, it's something that will happen, you know, at a later date.
On that final day of the season in Washington, you announced the contract extension for your manager, Mike Redmond. You announced the entire coaching staff would be coming back. You know, this is hard to believe. I looked this up today, Michael. It's only the fourth time in this franchise's history that a manager and his entire staff are going to be back intact in consecutive seasons. Last happened in 08 and 09. The continuity and the group that you've assembled now on this coaching staff with all this young talent has got to be just a huge plus for you.
I think it's really a big key to the success that we were able to have in 2014. Red and his staff, they set a tone from the first day of spring training of what our expectations were and how we were going to approach the game and how we were going to play the game, how we were going to play for 27 outs. And I think you saw a team that played with Red's personality. You know, he was an overachiever as a player. And I think you saw a team that, you know, with all the comeback victories and all the walk-off wins, that's what they were about. It was a team-first mentality that we started in spring training. And our coaching staff set the tone and carried it out. And were a big reason why we were able to take the step that we did. And I think that's really what we wanted to recognize at the end of the season, that we appreciated all that they did for allowing our players to reach their potential.
And lastly, as we wrap up with Michael Hill, it's November 10th, a lot of offseason in front of us, but it seems to me like this National League East is shaping up to be a very interesting division. You know, the Nationals are loaded. The Mets are coming fast. The Marlins, we think, are coming fast. Time of transition, certainly in Philadelphia, maybe a little bit in Atlanta as well. How do you assess this division right now? It's an intriguing group of teams.
Well, I think first and foremost, the thing that you look at is a lot of good pitching in this division. And it's good pitching in Washington, it's good pitching in Atlanta, it's good pitching in New York, and it's good pitching in Miami. And even, you know, Philly with you know, whatever issues they may have, they still have, you know, they have some very good pitching, some Cy Young candidates in their rotation. So it's always going to be a bear of a division. You know that everyone is trying to retool and do everything that they can to better themselves. And that's why it's always a challenge for DJ and I to make sure that we're doing likewise. I mean, everybody wants to sit atop, you know, that National League East division. And until we get there, we won't stop trying to find ways to improve our roster because that's where we want to be.
Well, Michael, we know how busy you are out there in Arizona. We're grateful for all the time you've taken with us tonight. Thanks for the insight, and I promise you we'll do this again before the offseason's over.
All right, sounds good, guys.
That's Michael Hill, the Marlins President of Baseball Operations, our leadoff guest on our season premiere edition of Marlins Hot Stove tonight. Going to take a break. When we come back, we'll check some of the news of the day in Major League Baseball, and we'd like to hear from you. What did you think about what Michael Hill had to say? You have any suggestions, any thoughts? Now's the time to jump online, 866-801-0940. The number to call, 866-801-0940. You can also tweet me your questions, at Glenn Geffner, or you can Facebook me as well. We're glad you're with us on our season premiere of Marlins Hot Stove. We're on more right after this on 940 Wins.
Baseball's hot stove season is here. The Marlins' Glenn Geffner is on 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
It feels real good.
And the ball's coming out of the arc, and it's really nice and easy. Mechanics feels great. And I think the most important part, it feels like, you know, I never had a surgery and I never stopped throwing this. It's weird because, you know, you think you're going to feel a little out of time or you're going to feel, you know, feel weird, but, you know, it's just coming out of the hand, incredible, and really effortless. That's what I'm really looking for from now. That's one of my most important goals for my career, is try to just throw effortless.
That is Jose Fernandez beginning to throw again last month after the Tommy John surgery back in May. It was at this time a year ago when Jose Fernandez was named the National League's Rookie of the Year after that stellar Major League debut season. We have a couple of new Rookies of the Year as of about an hour and a half ago. Jose Abreu, the unanimous Rookie of the Year selection in the American League. Abreu, the White Sox first baseman, had a monster season. First year coming over from Cuba at the age of 28. He beat out the Angels' 16-game winner, Matt Shoemaker, who finished second. Dylan Betances of the Yankees came in third in the AL Rookie of the Year vote. On the National League side, the Marlins saw enough of Jacob deGrom to know that he was a very deserving winner of the NL's Rookie of the Year award. deGrom had a terrific season for the Mets, went 9-6, a 2.66 ERA and 22 starts. He was at his best against Miami, made four starts against the Marlins, was 2-0 with a 1.67 ERA. 27 innings against the Marlins, struck out 34, walked only 8. He was first on 26 of the 30 ballots. Billy Hamilton of the Reds got the other four first-place votes, came in second. Colton Wong, the Cardinals' second baseman, came in third in the National League Rookie of the Year vote. You've got the Managers of the Year being announced tomorrow night, 6 o'clock on the MLB Network. We will learn who the Cy Young Award winners are on Wednesday night. Again, it's 6 on the MLB Network. And then Thursday night, the announcement we're all waiting for down here, we will find out who the most valuable players are in the American and National Leagues. In the National League, you've got Giancarlo Stanton, and you've got Clayton Kershaw. It appears to be a two-man race. Andrew McCutchen of the Pirates, the other finalist, and we'll see how it plays out, though. We're certainly going to have plenty to talk about in that regard when we're back here with you again next Monday night. Want to get out to the phones. Got a couple of callers on the line. Let's start with Chris in Boca.
Yeah, I want to thank you for asking Mike my question about Tyler Kolek, but I want to ask you about him, too. Sally and I sat next to Orin Freeman at the All-Star game in Minneapolis last summer, and I said it is absolutely imperative with the number two pick that we did not make a mistake, and Orin is convinced that we did not make a mistake with Kolek. I have a couple reservations, though. Bruce and Sue are concerned about his weight, and the other thing is the Baseball America article I read said that if he makes it to the Marlins, by the time he gets here, his fastball will be less than what it is now, which is up to 100. And, you know, he's a high school pitcher, so I was wondering if you share the same concerns that I do in those two areas about Tyler.
Well, Chris, if you've seen Tyler Kolek pitch, you're a step ahead of me in that regard. I got to admit that. You know, I've read a lot about him. I've talked to a lot of people about him, and we certainly hear glowing reports. Remember, Jose Fernandez was a high school pitcher taken in the first round just a couple of years ago, and there was some concern the night of the draft about Jose's weight potentially moving forward. So a lot can happen between now and the time Tyler Kolek gets to the big leagues. Hopefully, a lot of it on the positive side, but you know, we'll see. This will be a big spring for Tyler Kolek. The expectation, what I understand, is that he'll most likely begin the season at Greensboro with a chance to maybe move relatively quickly, and you'd think that Kolek, a guy who's going to be a big part of this franchise's future, you can never have enough good arms. And when you start with Jose and Henderson Alvarez and Jared Cozart and Nathan Eovaldi and some of the guys who are here already, the pitchers we talked about in the last segment with Michael Hill, the Andrew Heaneys, the DeSclafanis, the Nicolinos who are on deck, and then you add Kolek and others to the mix, Jose Urena, who had a big year at AA this year, that's a position of strength for this organization. And you can't sit here and guarantee that every single one of them is going to pan out, but certainly hope that a good number of them do, as Jose and others have. And now we'll see if Kolek can be one of the next in line there. But it's a very intriguing arm when you talk about people saying that in the history of the draft, going back to the mid-1960s, they're not sure you've ever seen a high school pitcher with an arm like Kolek's. We'll see how it translates. And when he's hitting 102, 103 with some regularity, and you lose a few miles per hour off that fastball, you can live with that a little bit. I think the key for Kolek, from what we understand, though, and with so many pitchers at that age, is the secondary stuff. And can he develop consistent breaking ball, a good changeup to be successful consistently at the big league level? So we'll see how that plays out. But Kolek, a guy who I think is still at the minimum a couple of years away, and it'll be fun to watch him develop. Let's get back out to Mark on his cell phone.
Hello?
Mark, thanks for the call.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
This is more about you. I want to ask a question. I heard on a broadcast this year that you used to do the Rochester Red Wing games.
I did, back in the 90s.
In the night, were you there with Joe Altobelli in the booth?
I didn't work in the booth with Joe, but Joe was the general manager, actually, the time I was in Rochester for much of that time, and remains a very dear friend, special man.
Oh, wow, because I've been going up there for years. I played against the Red Wings when it was at the old Silver Stadium, and I know Naomi Silver has taken over the team now. I guess where she runs all the concession stuff, rather than, I think, doesn't the town own the team now or something like
that? Well, it's community owned ever since her dad led the stock drive back in the 60s. Naomi runs the whole operation up there now with the GM Dan Mason, but it's a terrific baseball town. My last year there was the last year in the old ballpark, Silver Stadium, in 1996.
Oh, so you were there at Silver Stadium? Wow. I played in that league in 1979. I was with the Charleston Charlies, the Astros AAA team.
Many great memories of Rochester, for sure, and love that old ballpark.
I've been going there for 30 years. My girlfriend lives up there. In fact, she worked at the new stadium for a little bit in the suite, and she did the Xerox and the Wigsman suites, the two big suites up there. But, yeah, I've been going up there for years. And every time we go up there, I go out to the new stadium. It's beautiful.
It certainly is. I've had a chance to see a couple of games there. It's a great minor league town, a great environment. And, Mark, we appreciate the call and a little trip down memory lane. Thanks a lot, Mark. We are talking baseball every Monday night. Marlins Hot Stove getting started here tonight. Looking forward to having some more terrific guests in the weeks ahead. Look forward to your participation in the show each week as well. You can give us a call at 866-801-0940. You can always tweet me. You can Facebook me as well. Be talking Marlins baseball with you at this time every Monday night moving forward here up until the start of spring training in mid-February. We mentioned that you've got the awards coming up later this week. Managers of the Year tomorrow night, Cy Young Award Wednesday night. The MVP is announced on Thursday. Tell you what, it is going to be very interesting. And if I were a betting man, which I'm not, my money is on Clayton Kershaw walking away with the National League's MVP. If I were a voter, which I'm not, my vote would go to Giancarlo Stanton. I think when you look at what Giancarlo did this year, in an era where offense is down so dramatically, where pitchers are dominating the game, Kershaw had a great year, as many pitchers did. Kershaw had a historic year pitching in a pitcher's ballpark in a largely pitcher-friendly division. But look at what Giancarlo Stanton did. When offense around the game is down, when he himself plays his home games in a ballpark that is very pitcher-friendly, you look at the numbers Stanton put up. To me, he's the MVP of the National League this season. We'll see what the base writers say when their vote is revealed come Thursday night. The sense you get talking to people, hearing stuff, reading stuff, is that Kershaw is probably the favorite, but our hopes certainly are with Giancarlo to give us plenty to talk about when we do this again next Monday night. That's all the time we have for this week. We appreciate your tuning in tonight. Thanks to my guest, Marlins President of Baseball Operations, Michael Hill, and All-Star Engineer tonight, Mike Lekomiak. A reminder, we're back again next Monday at 7. We'll have more Marlins guests and more Marlins talk. I'll post details about next week's show on Twitter to get a little bit closer. But that is all for now. Stay tuned for Monday Night Football. It is the Eagles and the Panthers, and it's coming up next on your home for the Marlins, Miami Sports Station, 940 WINS.